Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go!
Happy Monday morning, everyone, and welcome in to Gramlich and McLean, the first post-Christmas episode. Mac, I hope you had a very Merry Christmas. I know that you are Buddy the Elf, kind of reincarnate, if you will. I think Buddy the Elf is still alive, so I don't really want to say that. But I know that you're a big Christmas guy, so I trust that you had a very good holiday.
Man, it was awesome just to be with family, be with friends, and to you know, really just in a time where things are crazy and different, and you know, having to Zoom other relatives, hoping and wishing we could all be together, but understanding we want to be safe. It was great, and you know, I hope yours was as well.
It was. It definitely was, Mac. And you know, it made me start thinking about bowl season because I watched a little bit of the Coastal Liberty game. Well, all of the Coastal Liberty game.
Tears are falling from my eyes as you're bringing that up right now.
Can we just hit on that for a second? Could you believe? I get that that's a strategy to basically run the clock out as much as possible, and then you're going to kick a field goal. But it backfired so hard on Liberty, and I can't believe they still pulled it out.
That was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen that happen. And really, we've seen it this year so often in the NFL, in college, where people are handing it off. The defense is like, come on, score, come on in here. And then the running back just stops. And it's amazing to see. But then I'm not sure why, you know, the young man from Liberty didn't just do that again, why he got so close. And then, of course, the guys from Coastal are pulling him into the end zone. You know, he tries to slam on brakes for some reason, just puts the ball backwards, fumbles. At the end of the day, though, they got the big W there. Unbelievable job by Liberty. That was such a fun game and really delivered. I mean, how cool would it have been, Kelly, if that was the G5 national championship? Now, I'm sure it would have been maybe BYU. Actually, maybe not with Liberty. They only lost to a Power Right. 5 team. So, you know, it's just, I wish that the G5 would look at that, because how neat would it be for them to have their own Heisman, which probably would have been Liberty's quarterback, and their own national championship, which would have been, you know, Liberty winning it. I just think it's different. It's cool. Why not celebrate it and have you guys celebrate at the highest level?
I agree. I like that, Mac. I really do. And yeah, Malik Willis, he's the real deal. There's no doubt about it. Before we get to these ACC bowl games, today we're going to break down every bowl game outside of the playoff that the ACC is involved in. And then we're going to get into some other stuff in the week, and I want you to preview that, Mac. But first, we never talked about, and I can't believe we didn't, Eric McLean calling the inaugural Myrtle Beach Bowl, which was epic. So how was that experience?
We were so distracted on all these great bowl games that we couldn't focus in on my bowl game with App State in North Texas. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, just a kind of an honor for me to, you know, I live in North Carolina. I grew up in, you know, Tennessee and Ohio, but I find myself and think of myself as a South Carolinian. And to be, you know, calling the first ever bowl game in the state of South Carolina, it was just cool. It was a cool honor. And whether ESPN even had any thought process when they were assigning these bowls is, hey, he's a Carolina guy, he would enjoy that. It was neat to be a part of history there. And then just to see a great performance from App State. And man, I mean, we thought that it was going to get out of hand. Did not think it would get out of hand at the point where every time we're running a stretch zone play, we're going for 60, 70, 80 yard touchdowns. So that was nuts. And then, of course, to be on the call with you know, two guys who have been lobbying for this game since it came out that the game was going to happen. Marty Smith, Ryan McGee, was hilarious. That was the most unique game I've ever called. I know I've only done four, Kelly, but that was the most unique thing ever. It was kind of like a hybrid studio comedy football game, all in the same thing. It was a lot of fun and a really, really cool experience.
Can you confirm or deny that you specifically matched your tie and pocket square to the Smurf turf or the green turf?
Right.
The surf turf is what it is.
Yeah. I can 100% confirm that
I knew it.
Was wanting to be a part of that beautiful teal carpet that's out there, if you will, and matched it up perfectly with the tie and the pocket square. I actually had my haberdasher, who's in Columbia, South Carolina. express ship me that tie because I had one in here, but it just didn't match quite as well as I wanted to. So he sent it overnight and we got it done.
Can you define that word for us simple people?
A haberdasher? It's basically like, you know, the guy that builds all my clothes. That's what he does.
Haberdasher.
Yeah, look it up. Look it up.
And well, I remember you called, I believe it was Ewood, your haberdashery brother.
Right. Which probably isn't a word, but hey, he tries to, he tries to keep it clean on the sideline. I respect it. And, you know, maybe I had something to do with that. I used to tag him in some of my stuff last year and be like, hey, man, you got to keep up. And he's doing a great job with it this year. Ewood is.
Influencer.
I just try my best.
Okay, back. We have exciting news for the rest of the pod. So Monday, today's episode, rest of the bowls. And we don't mean to call them rest of the bowls. It's not the Roy bus of bowls. But they matter. We're excited.
That's right.
But then Wednesday, we have some special, special guests, Eric MacLean.
Yeah, we got such great, responses from the Homer cast and having two guests instead of one. So we kind of wanted to follow along those lines and really just have a couple of different unique perspectives and look at the college football playoffs. So Andrea Adelson, David Hale, two just unbelievable writers for ESPN, senior writers. They've been there, done that, cover the greatest of the greats. Andrea has really done some amazing work with the college football 150 years that we just did at ESPN. David Hale obviously has, covered this conference for quite some time. So really excited to get those two guys on joining with us. We're going to break it down. It's not going to be Homer. It's not going to be, two on two, but it's just going to be four different perspectives and really dive into this college football playoff.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And then Friday's episode will be full on. We're talking playoff. It's going to come out on New Year's Day to get you ready for that. And then we might hit on the Orange Bowl again too, to get ready for the Orange Bowl, even though Mac and I are bummed because every North Carolina player under the sun is opting out. We'll get to that. I'm going to call it the Big Four breakdown today,
Mac,
because we have four big bowl games we want to talk about. Our Big Four breakdown is brought to you by Sunshine Beverages. Feel good energy. It is the perfect pick-me-up. It sparkles with vitamins, electrolytes, and only 70 milligrams of natural caffeine that is sourced from organic green coffee beans. In delicious flavors like blueberry lemonade, clementine twist, and gingerberry, Sunshine offers a balanced boost with great taste and better-for-you ingredients. You guys can find Sunshine at your local Publix or visit drinkthesunshine.com and use our code ACC10 at checkout for 10% off your order. That's drinkthesunshine.com. Sunshine, feel good energy. And Mac, I have to tell you, when I was home, I went home for Christmas to my parents' house. My mom, I looked in her fridge, her pantry. She had, let me count, 2 12-packs of the gingerberry. This woman is
The gingerberry is really good. So that was kind of one that I didn't stray away from, but I love the pear and the blueberry so much that I just kind of gave all those the attention. And then I was kind of like down to my last, the bottom of the barrel, if you will. I was like, I guess I'll try it. And it's actually really good because I love ginger, and that little bit of berry in there is really nice too. So you guys, you have to check it out. We've been telling you guys about our great partners there for a couple of weeks, almost a month and a half now. Go check them out. You're going to love it. Trust me. I don't mess with these normal energy drinks. These guys, they're the real deal. You're going to love it.
Also, we're going to have some giveaways coming soon.
Yeah, come on, a little bit of tease. Come on.
Stay tuned
they're hooking
for
you guys
that.
Up. You're going to love it. It's these really cool packs, kind of a mix pack, if you will, Kelly, a variety pack, really cool kind of packaging. We sent it to all our guests who have been on the show so far, got really good feedback from those guys. So be on the lookout on social media. You'll see it. We'll put out a link and kind of maybe even a poll, and that's how you guys can participate.
It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, Mac, let's get to these bowl games. The granddaddy of them all is the Rose Bowl. I would say this one, the grandmother of them all, it's the Cheez-It Bowl. Look, this one's huge, okay? And I'm joking. I do love this matchup, but there's something about the Cheez-It Bowl that speaks to me that I love so much. It is college football in a nutshell. I just love that we have a bowl called the Cheez-It Bowl. This is between number 18 Miami, number 21 Oklahoma State. This game is tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. on ESPN. Oklahoma State is a 2.5-point favorite. the teams that aren't the ACC teams being a favorite, that is a trend that you will notice. But first and foremost, Mac, let's start with Miami, because we got some huge news a couple of days ago. De'Aaron King is coming back. And I think the pod led to this, because you have been campaigning for this, and so has Mark Richt and others, for weeks. This is big time news.
Yeah, Kelly, I actually was going to wait until we got on here to tell you, but Miami just sent me a big check, you know, thanking me for getting him back to the campaign, you know, just writing it out to the campaign. So I'll send you your...
Good, you'll be splitting that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Your 50% will be coming in the mail. But no, in all seriousness, I am so excited about the fact that he's coming back. You and I, again, have spoken about it so many different times, even teased, you know, when we did our last episode before Christmas break, saying, I think there's going to be some opt-outs, but De'Aaron King's going to be that guy, that he's going to stick around. He's the glue. He's everything that holds this together. So now that he has officially made that decision, can't be more excited for him, for Miami, just this team moving forward. I think it means so much of where that program's going. And we talked about, you know, after the tail whipping against UNC, everything that they had done this year was kind of just, you know, erased. And I wasn't, you know, going that far yet. Some other people had said that. And I think this really saves it. I think the fact that you're not having to go back into the transfer portal, you're not having to grow up one of your young freshmen really quickly and saying, hey, look, you're the guy. I think that you're going to have a sixth-year player, a guy that has been there, done that, been very successful, and obviously loves this program, back leading your squad. It is huge. So I start there. I think that's really good for them. But looking at this game specifically, we need to see Miami play motivated. We need to see them kind of get that bad taste out of our minds, out of our mouth, just from the last time that we saw them. And it's going to be tough, because on defense, like we alluded to, a lot of guys are going to be missing. Jalen Phillips, Quincy Roche have both opted out and said, hey, look, we're going on to the next level. We're not playing in this game, which I thought would happen. And maybe even more. Those are the two that, you know, have really popped right now. There might be a couple of more that come out before the game is actually played. But I think it's going to be interesting. You've got to step up. This Oklahoma State offense, they're not crazy explosive. They do some really good things, especially running the ball. But they also are missing one of their best players, Chuba Hubbard, a guy that, you know, has been right up there with Travis Etienne for the last 2-3 years of everybody being so excited about. He's not playing. Now, they've been kind of used to that. He's been on and off for them all year, so that they have developed people around them. But certainly something to pay attention to is that Miami defense. Can they stop the run? Can they not let Oklahoma State get going?
Desmond Jackson has stepped up for them, L.D. Brown, these running backs, and Chuba Hubbard. He only played 7 games this year. He opted out a couple games ago.
Right.
I found that situation in Okie State to be so odd. And, you know, the fact that Chuba Hubbard, he already is gone. I don't know if that reflects on the rest of the team, and maybe not, because, look, the last game of the year, the Cowboys beat Baylor 42-3, had 600 yards of offense. So they're very balanced, which is what I think is scary about Oklahoma State. But we know Miami's defense has looked pretty darn good this whole season. I will say, Mac, are we concerned? In other words, how is Miami going to be able to adjust? Because we know that Jalen Phillips and Quincy Roche have both opted out of this game as well for Miami.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see who steps up. I've seen some tweets, some interviews discussing, you know, Zach McLeod potentially moving down to defensive end. If you guys remember, a year ago, he redshirted because he was going to move to middle linebacker. And when those studs, Big Shaq from Miami, when they went to the NFL, then Zach was going to come in and really be that stud middle linebacker. It hasn't panned out great this year. I think he only has like 25, 26 tackles on the season, which certainly is not what he expected or wanted at all. But so maybe he transitions and even comes back next year and moves down to defensive end full time and becomes kind of a rush specialist. So this will be a good snapshot for Miami, again, depending on who else decides to opt out or actually play of next year, and to see what they have coming back. And again, I think King saying that now, playing in this game, hopefully that'll rally a lot of different guys, you know, outside of these potential two first rounders in Jalen Phillips and Quincy Roche, or at least top two rounds, to come back and want to build upon it and just further and improve their stock.
It's very rare that you see a guy make this kind of announcement before a game. For example, we're seeing I was home with my family, and a lot of my family are Longhorn fans. And Sam Ellinger said that he was going to announce after the bowl game. They're playing in the Alamo Bowl, I think. He was going to announce after the bowl game if he's coming back. So it's kind of rare that you know. And I think this could be a huge rallying cry for Miami. Build on this, and we'll take this into next year. And then the other part of it, too, is Miami's Georgia Tech game was canceled. So the last thing they did, the last thing they showed anyone, was being absolutely destroyed by North Carolina. So I could see Miami. I think Miami has the motivation factor in this game. And with bowl games, one of the biggest questions always is which team wants to be there more.
I completely agree with you. And I think it actually, you know, maybe have added to the De'Aaron King factoring in coming back or not, that just that they got beat so badly, like him not wanting that to be his last college performance. And of course there's a bowl game, whatever, but you know, if they would have won that game or lost by three instead of, you know, a million like they did, you know, does King opt out of this game and go to the league? So it's going to be very interesting. Can't wait to watch this game. It's going to be a good one, I think. And again, you talk about motivation, you talk about both teams wanting to finish strong. I think we're going to get two teams that really want to be there in this game.
Which I love. That's what you want to see in a bowl game. All right, let's talk about the Duke's Mayo Bowl in Charlotte, North Carolina, Mac City, between Wake Forest and Wisconsin. This game is on Wednesday, a nooner on ESPN. Wisconsin's a 7-point favorite. Mac, I'm not even going to bring up the Duke's Mayo Bowl because you and I, we were going to have an opportunity to possibly go. I'm just not even going to go there, okay? I'm not going to go there. But it's very exciting to have this bowl in Charlotte. It's the old Belk Bowl, now the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Again, Cheez-Its, Mayo, these are elite, elite bowl names.
They really are. They really are.
And, yeah, and
again,
I love it.
Kelly's is the Cheez-It Bowl. Mine's the Duke Mayo Bowl.
Yes, exactly.
And it's just, you know, again, you mentioned that opportunity. It would have been a lot of fun. You know, there is a Duke's Mayo Classic coming up between potentially the number one team in the country and maybe a top five team next year. Who knows? Maybe we get the invite. Maybe not. We'll see. We'll put a big push, maybe even a sponsor read for those guys to entice them, right? But no, I'm excited to see Wake. Again, it's a team that I thought was on the verge of really doing something special. You saw them just get obliterated their first couple of games of the season and not really have the development. And now they were looking hot. They were looking fantastic, really building momentum. Really, I thought, becoming one of the hottest teams to finish the season in the ACC. And then boom, COVID just absolutely crushes their team. They pause all activities for like 3 weeks, almost a month, and just come back and weren't the same team. I mean, guys opted out, guys injured, not able to play, was not the same team that I expected to see the last time that we saw them. Wasn't sure if we were going to get to see them again this year. Happy that it's in, you know, the Duke's Mayo Bowl, where they were supposed to be, the Duke's Mayo Classic, early in the year. So a little poetic justice that these guys finally get to Charlotte, get to play this game, and against a very good Wisconsin team defensively that can cause a bunch of problems. I mean, these guys are holding opponents to 15 points per game, 93 rushing yards per game. That is a tremendous defense. Now, of course, sample size a little bit small, but not much smaller than Wake's. They have two less games than Wake Forest. This isn't really a big arguing point like we can make for some of the other teams that are playing, you know, against teams who have completed full seasons. So I'm interested to see this one. Just going back to Wake Forest really quickly, can that offense get back on track? Can they finish this season really strong and have something to build upon in the offseason? The huge challenge, though, like I mentioned, is that defense. You know, can Christian Beal-Smith get it going on the ground at all? Because it's such a huge part of their offense, like Clemson, like UNC. These guys are so balanced to where things are built off of the run. So if you can't do that, is Sam Hartman going to have to throw it all over the yard? Which he can. You know, he's shown that he's more than capable of doing, but it's just, you know, something that they need to get going is that ground game. Now, they have a couple of opt-outs as well. You know, Boogie Basham has announced he's not playing. He's going on to the NFL, most likely a first, second rounder. And Kenneth Walker, the weird thing about Kenneth Walker, though, is that he's coming back next year. He's a guy that I don't know if he just got super uncomfortable or if there's things going on at home. You know, I'm not sure, but he's a really young guy. He's coming back. He announced all that. but he's just, you know, he didn't play in last game and he's not going to play in this bowl game. So that'll be a little bit strange. Like I mentioned, Christian Beale Smith doing it on his own. I'm sure we'll have another running back step up that we're not sure about, but you know, looking at Wake Forest's offense, they just have to get going and finish strong this year.
It's going to be all on CBS to get it done. Christian Beale Smith. I love that nickname, CBS. And we would talk about this duo in the ACC in terms of running backs, North Carolina's duo, of course, and we'll talk about UNC in a second, but it can be weird when your running mate isn't there. So either you exactly. step up and you're like, okay, every carry is coming to me, or you're not used to handling that load. So I think right. that's going to be a huge thing for Wake.
Yeah. And I think one thing to just look at when you look at Wake's season, it was almost like, all right, this game, it was Kenneth Walker's game. This game, it was Christian Beale's game. So it hasn't been, you know, quite the duo at the same time, like we've seen from a North Carolina where those guys are just killing you, both of them. It's really been kind of a trade. So, you know, hopefully that doesn't affect him. But when you look at who he's going against in this Wisconsin team, I mean, Graham Mertz, a quarterback for Wisconsin, I don't know if you could have started the season any better. A freshman, a guy who just exploded onto the scene. Kelly, he was 20 of 21 in his first game. 5 touchdowns, throwing bombs all over the place, tight ends, wide receivers, whatever it needed.
He had us all fooled. We thought yeah. Wisconsin was this whole new program.
Right. We thought it was this brand new team. He was going to win the Heisman, youngest ever, and they were for sure getting to the playoff. And then it's just like, what happened? I mean, he threw
COVID happened too.
Right. I mean, they got slammed 21 days. And y'all know the up until the playoffs started, the Big Ten's COVID rules were very strange. And 3 weeks, it was just very different from anybody in the season. So they got slammed there. But then Mertz himself was just never the same. He threw 5 touchdowns game one. He threw 3 touchdowns in the rest of the season combined. So they went downhill quickly. The offense, I mean, probably below average is how I'll describe them. Averaging 22 points per game, it's been mediocre at best. So, you know, I think if we can see the Wake Forest that won 4 straight games and look really good show up, they can have a really good performance. If not, I think this defense from Wisconsin can suffocate them and it's a snooze fest. But I hope that's not the case.
Do you see this game being a lower scoring affair?
I think I have to say yes, just to respect Wisconsin and understanding how good their defense is and what they can do. But at the same breath, I mean, I look at the ACC speed and I look at the skill players and how different that is from what they really see in the Big Ten. It's really hard to get a grasp on it, Kelly, just to understand when you have these inner, you know, minglings with conferences. Now, of course, we didn't get to see that really at all this year. In these bowl games, that's where these things really come out, and it's very telling of just where each conference kind of is. So I might even go and say that it's either going to be high scoring with Wake kind of blowing them out, or very low scoring and, you know, Wisconsin just kind of suffocating the game away and really not letting Wake move the ball. I don't know if there's that middle, you know, 35-27 ground. I don't know if that'll exist.
That's a good point. I agree. And I think it's whichever team can control the pace, can control the game, and can dictate to the other. Because Wisconsin wants to play lower scoring ground and pound. Wake wants to go out there and put up, what did they put up against North Carolina? 52 or whatever
exactly.
that game was. Craziness.
Exactly. The interesting thing, too, the line is 7 in favor of Wisconsin, and the over-under is 51.5. I think that's high given the line. Now, if the line was different, or I think it could be, but that's just kind of giving you that middle of the pack scoring game that I don't see that happening. So maybe you take the over, guys. I don't know.
Oh, a little gambling advice from
Eric
McClain.
Yeah, who knows, right?
I like it. I like it a lot. Okay. The Tax Slayer Bowl, Tax Slayer Gator Bowl, excuse me, Gator Bowl, brought to you by Tax Slayer.
Question, Kelly, when we introduce this bowl, do we have to say future home of Trevor Lawrence when we reference this bowl?
In Jacksonville, Florida?
Jacksonville?
I think we do.
Oh,
I think
man.
We do, as of now.
Can we just do a little side note? I am so excited and happy that he's not going to the New York Jets.
Ugh.
Oh, it's so exciting.
I agree.
So exciting.
I think it's going to be better for him overall. I agree.
I do too.
Even though New York, you know, the capital of America, if you, it's not, I know what the capital of America is, but you know what I mean? The Big Apple, that was a ridiculous statement. Guys, I'm sorry. I've been traveling all day.
Going off the wheels quick here.
You know
sorry.
What I mean? The city that never sleeps.
That's right.
To be in that kind of market, I think would have benefited him. But I also don't know. I don't think Trevor really wants to be in New York City. I don't get that vibe from him.
I think ownership there is bad. I think they need to make a ton of changes. I'm sure that we'll dive into this when draft comes around and have a couple of cool episodes for you guys. But I think Jacksonville is going to be such a better location for Trevor. I think when you look at their draft picks, they can really build something in this class if they're intentional and they figure it out. Now, of course, they need a head coach, they need a GM, they need all these other things too. but it could be a really interesting situation for the Jacksonville Jaguars. All right.
I agree.
Side note over. Go ahead.
Home of the Jags.
Right.
Number 23, NC State is playing Kentucky on January 2nd. So this is a day after the playoff, a noon game on ESPN. Kentucky is a 2.5-point favorite. How, Mac? I think that is just... You know what I think. I'm not going to say what I think it is because this is a family-friendly podcast, but I think that's ridiculous.
I don't get it either. I mean, this Kentucky team has been snooze fest, boring. You look at their offense. I mean, they're averaging
they don't have
21
one.
Points a game. No off. I mean, touchdown Terry. Listen, I'm kind of a closet Kentucky fan just because of some friends that I have that, you know, are big blue fans and
I'm just
really
finding this out now
hard.
By the way
you are this is breaking news so I don't know if I say I pull for them, but I pay attention when they're on TV and so that they have just not been great, that they're passing 124 yards per game. I mean, total just boring. It's not fun to watch. I mean, what year is it when I'm watching this? But in that same breath, they do have a very, very good offensive line, maybe one of the best in the country when the Joe Moore Award is kind of listing their finalists, and those guys come out nearly 200 yards a game per rushing. So I tell you all of that to just tell you this. Look, NC State, they find a way to win. They find a way to come out victorious, to win these type of football games, especially when they're not favored. And look, NC State, I'm looking you right in the eye here. I know you can't see me. I can't see you, but I'm talking to you. You have held the dignity of the ACC in your hands, and you've thrown it on your shoulders. And NC State, you're being asked to defend our honor one more time.
Do it again.
In the Gator Bowl, the Pack are going against the SEC, spearheading it on. You've got to find a way. You've got to do what you've done all year. Let's get to 9 wins, and let's have a great – let's celebrate with some Krispy Kreme donuts and call it a day.
I love everything you're saying there. You're exactly right. NC State – could help the ACC so much here. When they beat Liberty, Liberty's a good win.
G5 mean, national win. Champions. Let's call them what they are.
And NC State got it done. Saved the dignity of the ACC there. One more chance to do it, NC State. We're all counting on you. We're all rooting for you.
No
you can
doubt.
Do it.
And opt-outs for this game, we've kind of told you guys about each one of them. For NC State right now, none reported. For UK, Kelvin Joseph, he was announced, I believe, earlier in the season. So no new news for either team. Hopefully it stays that way. We've got a little bit of ways to go. That game being played, like Kelly said, on January 2nd.
You can do it, Pac. Mac and Kelly, we believe in you. All right, Mac, it's time for the big one. The Capital One Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida, number 13, North Carolina, versus number 5, Texas A&M. This is the day after New Year's, January 2nd, 8 p.m. on ESPN. A&M is a 7-point favorite. Surprises me a little. But then when you look at what's going on with North Carolina, Mac, I was so excited for this game. And I have to be honest, I'm a little bummed to see all these opt-outs. I just don't know who North Carolina, who's going to run the ball, who's going to catch it for UNC in this game.
Right. And just to touch on that line really quickly, I would not be shocked to see if it doesn't double, to be honest with you, by the time kickoff starts because of these reasons right here. No De'Ami Brown, no Michael Carter, no Javonte Williams, no Chaz Surratt. I mean, when you mentioned those three offensive guys, that's 3,484 yards gone. That's 36 scores gone. 57% of your offense is not going to be playing. Now, look. Big Tar Heel fan right here, right? I get, you know, just everybody's
such
hates
a
me.
Homer.
They say, man, look, you know, stop pulling for the heels. What the heck? I really enjoy this football team. Really love the offense. Really like the things that they're able to do. But I don't know who's left. I mean, you look at the stats. You look at the carries. I mean, a guy, DJ Jones, he's shown flashes, but very limited in his production. Daz Newsome has not announced that he is, you know, gonna play or not in this game. He is announced, I believe, Coach Mac Brown said that he's gone. He's going to the NFL, but hopefully he plays. Coffrey Brown, who is Dayami's brother, who is a true freshman, has had a great year. Expect him to step up. And then Emory Simmons. So three wide receivers that hopefully are all going to be available, all be able to play, that we're going to see a little bit of the future, Kelly, with this UNC offense and who they are going to be next year. So it's going to be really interesting to see. Texas A&M's run defense is particularly amazing, to say the least. I mean, they're holding people to under 100 yards each and every game, been able to really see them dominate. And again, similar to what I said about Wake Forest, when you're going against these great run teams, if you're not able to have that piece of your offense, if you're not able to get anything going, does that handicap you, or do you just overcompensate and hit everything through the air? So I'm very interested to see, like you, a little bit disappointed. I still want to see Sam Howell on this big stage and see if he can take another step to his superstardom. But like you said, I'm a little bit disappointed not to see some of these guys. You know, I really thought Javonte was going to come back, and Chaz. A little bit interesting to see both of those guys opting out.
Yeah, it was definitely a bummer for people who just want to see a good game in the Orange Bowl. And from the way I see it, with all these guys opting out, it comes down to Sam Howell versus Kellen Mond, that matchup. And if Kellen Mond can make some mistakes, if Kellen Mond isn't great, which, you know, this
he's
UNC...
good at that. He's good at making
mistakes. He can do that. But of course, this UNC defense hasn't exactly been one of the best in the ACC.
That's right.
But the way UNC wins this, in my mind, is that Sam Howell just goes off. But I do have a concern about Howell, too, because he's had such a good running game this year at North Carolina. And they use the run so much to set up the pass. So are you expecting Howell to be able to just put this team on his back? Or because of what they've done all year, I mean, how much can they adjust in such a small amount of time to not have Carter, to not have Williams, to not have, of course, Dyami Brown? I just don't really know what to expect from Sam Howell in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a huge difference for them, as you just mentioned, when you're looking at the fact that they are missing so much. And you look at the number of carries that both of those guys received, and Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, it was a huge bulk of the carries. When you look at everybody else who's left, you've got DJ Jones, 11 carries total for the season. Elijah Green, 10 total carries. Josh Henderson, 12 total carries. And then it's just all single digits. The two guys that are leaving, total over 310 carries together. So it is a massive drop in production. Two guys that they heavily relied upon. Sam Howell, now the leading rusher with 80 rushes, 120 yards. Obviously, those younger people that I just mentioned are going to step up. But it just goes to say, what is the UNC offense going to look like? You know, I think they are explosive enough. They have enough pieces that they'll find a way, but it's certainly going to look different. But Kelly, I think the biggest question of this game is, how motivated is Texas A&M to even play in this game? Coach Jimbo Fisher was mad, quite frankly, that his team was not selected, thought it was unfair that a 6-win Ohio State team, who had already had rules changed for them to get in their conference championship, is in over them when they've played nearly half the game. So for me, does Texas A&M even want to be here? Or are they going to, you know, be upset and want to prove a point that, hey, you left us a really good team out of the playoff that could have contended for a national championship? Or have they all checked out? It's going to be interesting to see the motivation for that team. Now UNC defensively, as you mentioned, not the greatest the ACC has to offer, but those guys are really going to have to focus in on stopping the run. Texas A&M has a first-team all-SEC running back, Isaiah Spiller, that has really caused some problems for opposing defenses this year. And Texas A&M's offensive line, they're dominant up front. They had three guys on the second-team all-SEC team, and just really impressive to see those guys. Unlike North Carolina, who has everybody opting out, as of right now, Texas A&M has zero. Going to be interesting to see when we get to the second, really for both teams, who lines up and just quite frankly, who's out there first.
And that's where I see the difference here, because I think everyone's mind goes to Georgia. When Georgia played in the Sugar Bowl against Texas, and it looked like they did not care at all. They had so many people opt out.
Exactly.
And they got beat.
Yeah.
The difference for me is that Georgia had made the playoff the year before and had come this close, so close to winning a national title. A&M has not been there. They're still trying to build their program. So I think the Orange Bowl means a lot to Texas A&M right now, as it should. And I think that's been reflected in their lack of opt-outs too, Mac. So I do think A&M is going to be very motivated for this Orange Bowl matchup, even though Kellen Mond was tweeting and saying, you know, this is garbage and all that. I think that's kind of where the parallels stop. Now, I could be wrong, but I don't see them as a Georgia Sugar Bowl situation where Georgia just did not care. They did not want to be there at all.
You know, and again, I think if we didn't see all those opt-outs from UNC, maybe it got to that point just when you see the explosiveness and the ability to score, and can Texas A&M keep up? But now that all those guys are out, I think this game is a lot closer. You know, I think that line, again, I would not be surprised if Vegas already thought that was going to be the line with all those guys. I can only imagine where it's going to creep up when they're gone and when they reevaluate that line. Guys, that was our Sunshine Beverage Big Four game review. Enjoy a can of sunshine and have that natural feel-good energy. They have all you need. Remember that you can find them at your local Publix, or you can go online, drinkthesunshine.com, and use our promo code ACC10. Save you guys 10% on checkout of your whole order. Kelly, I want to move on to the ACC awards. We had Coach of the Year, Players of the Year. Let's start with Coach of the Year, Brian Kelly. And Notre Dame joins the conference 1 year. He comes in, wins the award, has the same record as Dabo Swinney. What do you think?
I thought that was interesting. I really did. Now, I get it. Look, not many people were picking Notre Dame to make the playoff. And for Notre Dame to have an undefeated regular season, I think it has to mean something. They pushed through COVID. They had some injuries, et cetera. I didn't think he was the coach of the year. I think you could have looked at someone like Dave Doran. I thought Manny Diaz, even though at the end, I think the blowout against North Carolina really hurt him. But Manny Diaz did a really good job down in Miami. But for me, I think I would have gone Dave Doran with how NC State pushed through and found a way to win 8 games. It's not every year NC State wins 8 games, guys. And they didn't even play the usual cupcake non-conference games they normally play. That's what's crazy. I also think maybe Jeff Hafley could have had consideration, but this was the one I pretty much agreed with all the rest of them. Brian Kelly, coach there. This is not an anti-Notre Dame statement. What did he do that was so amazing? He beat Clemson, yes, but then he went and got blown out when Clemson was healthy.
Yeah, it's hard to say because, again, the way I look at this award, I don't want it to be the coach of the team that did more than we expected award. I think there should be two different things, because how we say Coach Sweeney for the Clemson Tigers is the second best or first best, depending on who you ask, coach in the entire country, and yet he never wins this award. Same thing with Coach K in the basketball side.
That's true.
I mean, I think he's won it twice. You're telling me he's not the best coach in the ACC every other year at least? So it's a little bit interesting with how that goes. I'm not mad at Coach Kelly winning the award. I wish they would have announced it maybe before the ACC championship, because then I think it was much more justified. After the fact, I lean even more heavy that Coach Sweeney should have won it. But, you know, all those guys that you just mentioned, I think we're in contention. I would have loved to see the breakdown of the voting and who, you know, received what votes and where they really were. So I'm with you, though. I think it's an interesting award that every other year, maybe except for last year, there's a lot of discussion and argument about it. Offensive Player of the Year, Player of the Year. It's funny, when we were doing all this TV stuff with the huddle, you know, our producers and maybe even some of the different, you know, guys that are on there said, this year it's not so clear to me. And I never agreed with that. I really thought that Trevor was the clear-cut guy. You know, maybe it was just the what have you done lately and the fact that he missed so many games. But to me, there was never really a doubt that Trevor Lawrence was the player and offensive player of the year. What do you think about that?
I thought there was a little bit of doubt before the ACC championship, just because against Virginia Tech, Trevor just didn't look great. He was fine, but he wasn't great. And I just didn't know how we were treating COVID, because if someone gets injured during the season and they only play X number of games, most of the time, if it's a decent injury where you're out 2 games, maybe more, that can hurt you when it comes to player of the year, all ACC, whatever. But COVID is not an injury. So that was my main question, is I just didn't really know how we were treating it. Is Trevor Lawrence the best player in the ACC? Yes, he is. There's no doubt. But because he had missed two games, I thought that's what made it close. Sam Howell's numbers were excellent. If they find a way to beat Florida State and Virginia, there's a very good chance that he ends up winning the award. And then Ian Book, yeah, Notre Dame had an undefeated regular season, but Book's numbers just were not good enough, in my opinion. So, and it's mainly a quarterback award, as are
I was going to say, no mention of Javonte Williams at all.
Javonte Williams, he's in there. He is. And I think even Khalil Herbert, you could have discussed him just because his numbers were insane. I know you had him on your first team, Mac, which I really appreciated because his numbers were that good. And without him, Virginia Tech wins like one game.
Right.
Like that, Mac, that you had him on your first team.
No doubt. And you know, for me, it did come down to Javonte Williams and Trevor Lawrence. I think those two guys are just so good. And really, Javonte doing things that we haven't seen from an individual running back in quite some time. You look at his yards per rush, you look at his total yards, you look at his total touchdowns. I mean, 19 rushing touchdowns. It was a very impressive year from the North Carolina running back. Excited to see where he goes moving forward. Defensive player of the year, Kelly, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. I thought this one, again, similar to Trevor Lawrence, was a no-brainer, no contest. He's the guy.
Same here. I agree. I thought that guy was incredible for Notre Dame. And say what you want about Notre Dame's offense throughout the year, but their defense really never wavered. The defense was the most consistent piece for Notre Dame.
Yeah, and this is the thing. You know, people want to throw at me Peyton Wilson. You know, NC State led the conference in tackles, did so great. Look at his stats when they're lined up with each other. And this is really my thing. And when I go back, do I think Peyton's a great player? For sure. Do I think he's anywhere close to the level of play that Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is? No shot. He's not even close. And just because you have all these stats isn't necessarily a good thing, guys. Just think of how much more his defense was out on the field than Wu was, than Notre Dame was. And the overall impact, sure, you can measure that and say, man, he's always around the ball, which he is. But Wu just creates so many different matchup solutions for you for Notre Dame, causes matchup problems for the offense. And just the way that you can use him, it's clear cut that he was number one. And really, I think number two was his teammate, Kyle Hamilton, the safety of Notre Dame. So I think, you know, Notre Dame is really insurging themselves into these awards. And it goes to Rookie of the Year here and offensive rookie, Kyren Williams. The one problem I have with this, Kelly, and, you know, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, I do not think that redshirt freshmen should be classified as rookies. I know that at the end of the day, they're freshmen, and it says freshmen by their name, but I just think having a full year of that experience, of practice, of lifting, of knowledge of football, it's not the same as a true freshman. I think the offensive rookie of the year should have been Jordan Addison at Pitt. I just wish we would remove the redshirting from, you know, voting on this award.
It's a fair point. It kind of reminds me when Ben Simmons won Rookie of the Year, but he was a second-year player.
That should not count. That makes no sense. That's an even worse example. I'm glad you just brought that up.
And you know, personally, because you redshirted, so you understand the difference between a true freshman and a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, it's night and day. There's no comparison. So is he a fantastic player? Yes. I think if he would stay in the ACC, I think there's no doubt he's a preseason first team running back. I think there's no doubt that he is right in there in contention for player of the year next year. Unfortunately, it's looking like Notre Dame's out of here. So he's going to take those trophies and run. Defensive rookie of the year, Brian Brussey from Clemson, guy that has been unstoppable. I thought, in my opinion, he should have been the overall rookie of the year. And it's funny, when I was kind of doing these, you know, I put out my all ACC teams and showed everybody those and kind of showed you where my voting was. And, you know, first and second team, I got a lot of funny texts back when I was kind of sending those around to people early and saying, look, Brian's a first team defensive lineman. And for a couple of reasons. Number one, the overall depth and talent isn't really there this year. So a young guy like this can step up immediately and make an impact. And when it comes to freshmen, I mean, this guy was dominant. The Notre Dame game, if you guys want to see a highlight reel of what a rookie could look like, go back and watch that game from the ACC championship. He was putting these offensive linemen from Notre Dame in car seats. He was throwing them down, throwing them backward, and making all kinds of plays. It was more than impressive. So what do you think, Kelly? Was he kind of your defensive rookie of the year? Did you have another guy in mind? What were you thinking there?
I thought it was Brzee. And, you know, numbers don't blow you away at defensive tackle most of the time, but the space he was able to take up, he played the best when Clemson needed him the most, when Tyler Davis was out. Look, it was supposed to be Brzee and Tyler Davis in the middle, but then you lose Tyler Davis basically at the beginning of the year. And so Brzee had to do so much, and he did just enough in every game. And of course, Notre Dame, he was still great. He got hurt at the end. That was part of the issue. The big safety he had in the, I forget
Boston
what
College.
That was.
Yep. Boston College game. Yep.
That's right. Yes. So I thought Brzee was the pick here for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And just what really a bright future for a lot of these guys. Again, we mentioned Kyren Williams. Most likely he's leaving the ACC, but a guy for sure we'll keep all our eyes on. And then, you know, big Brian Bressy from Clemson, only going to get bigger, faster, stronger. Can't wait to see that guy continue to develop. Guys, this was a fun episode. We kind of ran through those four bowl games, the other bowls, the Roy Bowls, if you will.
The Roy Bowls.
The rest of y'all bowls that we're really excited to see. Bowl season to me, it's NCAA tournament basketball. It's bowl season football. Two really, really fun times. And like Kelly mentioned, Wednesday, you guys aren't going to want to miss that episode. We've got some really fun playoff talk with two experts. I mean, these guys cover the ACC. They cover college football like nobody else. And Andrea Adelson and David Hale. So really, really excited for that. Thank you guys for listening. If you haven't already, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop us a little rating, a review. It's always fun to hear from you guys. We greatly appreciate that. But until next time, we'll see y'all.